Okay, well, why don't we get started? According to Verizon, it is 9:50, so we will go ahead and do this. Just a reminder, there are CDs and MP3s of all the presentations that you've been listening to. I encourage our panelists to please speak up so that you will be picked up in the recorder, unless you don't want whatever you say to be heard in the future. So that'd be your other options. My name is Kate Brooks, and I'm the moderator for this panel, which is Career Management for Writers. And I was sort of thinking about how to introduce this, and I'm going to do this is, what do a CPA, a writer and a homeschooling mom, a lawyer college professor, a director of publishing and professor, and a licensed counselor have in common? Well, they're all on this panel talking about career management for writers, which I think is a unique factor about a writing career, is that it can be woven in to other careers, either directly or indirectly. When you think about other creative passions like music, becoming a musician, harder to do with a regular job because you've got to somehow do those late night open mics and concert tours and things. Or if you want to be an actor, you've got to take short-term work because you never know when the auditions are coming up and when the next three-month project will be. But with a writer, we may or may not be full-time writers. We get to cobble that into other things if needed, particularly when we're looking at how to make money in this field. So what I'd like to do is start by having the panel introduce themselves and talk a little bit about the writing they have done and a little bit about what form their writing has taken in conjunction with other careers and or standalone writing. So I've got four wonderful folks here. Rhea Fry, Rhea Fry, okay, and Luann Curley, and Roger Johns, and Sarah Weigel, and I'm going to let, if you don't mind starting, Rhea, and if we could just do a couple minutes on your career in writing.
So I've always kind of been in the writing field in some capacity. I went to school for fiction writing, and then I parlayed that into writing nonfiction, so I wrote some health and wellness books. That have done so well, no one's ever heard of them, so that's great, because I didn't have that author platform that's oh so important. But last year, this book came out, this was my debut novel, suspense novel called Not Her Daughter. I landed a two-book deal with St. Martin's Press, which was fantastic, and since then have gotten another two-book deal with them. So this launched last August. This came out on August 6th. I am now a full-time writer. Last year, I had my first six-figure year as a writer. I am very transparent about numbers. I think it's so, so, so important to talk about money if you are going to make this a career and all of the different ways that you can actually support yourself as a writer. I also have a side business for nonfiction writers where I work with them on creating their book proposals and trying to land agents and book deals. So I've really entrenched myself in this world. I have oh so many thoughts around things to do, things not to do, things I've tried that have worked, and things I've tried that have not worked. So looking forward to getting into it.
Great. My name is Luann Curley. I am a CPA. My dad roped me into being a CPA, taking over his practice by saying, well, you can hire someone to do all the work, and then you can write all the time. Well, various life things happen, and that didn't turn out to be the case. But I do write quite a bit. I was an English major. I had to go back later to get the classes I need to sit for the CPA exam and fulfill that dream, so to speak. So I agree. Numbers are very important. I've asked writers, how much do you make? How much did you get on your advance? And they've told me things like, less than I expected, or I thought I'd be making more money by now, which is totally unhelpful when you're trying to figure out exactly what this career will do for you.
Okay, and I am the executive director of the Career Center at Vanderbilt University, and I have been in career services at the University of Texas at Austin, at Dickinson College, Wake Forest University, over the past 30 years. And my first foray into serious writing was when I was teaching a class at the University of Texas. It was a career class. Most career books start with set your goal. But I worked with liberal arts students, and they didn't have one. And they had too many goals. They had too many things they wanted to do. And so I ended up putting all my course activities into a book that the folks at Viking Press titled "You Majored in What?" and so that was my first foray into it. This is a book I cannot name because I am a silent partner on writing it right now. Next year, starting in 2021, my name will be on the edition, and I'm also writing a special college edition of this. But anyway, I found that writing has just worked very naturally into what I do during the day. And next year, I plan to retire, and with the exception of this one contract on this ongoing book, I plan to write what you all are writing, mysteries, paranormal, whatever, just for fun. Roger.
I'm Roger Johns. Long, long, long time ago, I practiced corporate law, then became a college professor, and that was the major career for my life. Then I flunked retirement and got into the mystery writing business. And I write the Wallace Hartman Mysteries, which are about a homicide detective, a female homicide detective in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And I'm also with St. Martin's Press.
Hello, I'm Sarah Weigel. If my voice is scratchy, it's because I am just started a new job as a full-time professor here in Nashville at Belmont, and I've been talking nonstop to it was our first week of classes this week. So I'm the director of the publishing major at Belmont, but in my past life up until very recently, I was in literary PR. When I was in college, I was an English and literatures major, and people said, will you be a writer, meaning novelist very specifically, or will you be a teacher? And I said emphatically, no, I would never do either of those things. Now I am both. so, you know, we make plans and, as it says, as the saying goes. But I've loved working with authors with their careers in general, like how to figure out where they want to go. And it's my pleasure now that I am training up a new generation of people that will work in the industry to do that. And then as far as my own writing goes, I have... anything that I've published has been like articles that are all nonfiction, primarily related to the business aspects of publishing. But I am working on a novel that is fringe mystery. It's more of historical fiction, but there are some mysterious components. So you can look for that in about 30 years. It's a lot of research still being done because of the mystery part of it.
Wonderful. So what I'd like to get to now is kind of the meat of the program, and I'm hoping that each of our panelists will take maybe 5 minutes apiece or so. I'd like you to really delve in, if 5 minutes is delving in. What I'd like each panelist to do is to share whatever their particular wisdom is around building a writing career. So this could be about managing money. It could be about writing itself, deciding when to leave your day job, managing the overwhelming asides in writing, like having to have a website and having to do publicity and all that, or any other words of wisdom you would like to offer. So have at it for us,
Maria.
Great.
Might do a little bit more than 5 minutes.
Well, I'll start kicking people. Don't worry.
Okay, so I'll kind of use my just what I went through as an example and kind of what I talk to with writers all of the time. But I feel like I work with a lot of writers who are like, I just want to make a lot of money. I just want to get published and sell a million copies. And that can happen, but it's not the typical experience. I think going into this, you need to understand that this is a long game. Most of us have more than one book in us, so if you are going at it like, I just want to sell a million copies of this first book, 9 times out of 10, that's not going to happen, and you really, I don't think it should happen. I actually think that's kind of a disservice. I think you need to kind of really take your time and earn your way towards your ultimate goal, but for me, I think it does start with defining what you want your goals to be as a writer. Do you want to sell a lot of books? Are you wanting to just reach readers? You know, for me starting out, I was like, okay, I'm looking at this as a business. This is a product to sell on a shelf to people. I say that all the time, but it's so true. If you can take the emotion out of it and realize that this is a product that you're going to sell, that kind of can allow you to look at this like a business. So when I launched this book, readers did not know who I was, and I was like, okay, well, how am I going to reach them? I decided to hire a publicist. Yes, I had an in-house publicist, but I'm like, I'm only going to launch once. I'm going to look at taking this money and use it as a startup investment. My goal in that was not, publicity does not always translate to sales. I feel like it translates to reader awareness and engagement and really finding those readers. So we went out, this book hit all like the buzzworthy lists. It ended up getting a film deal before it came out, which helped publicize the book. On launch day, we reached 12 million people. 12 million people did not buy the book. I'm telling you that. But I really feel like I kind of honed in and used social media. That's something I'm sure we'll all get into. But, you know, social media can be very overwhelming. I talked about this on another panel. But I decided to kind of go all in on one. I chose Instagram for reader awareness. It's a very, very, very supportive community where they will share your books. If you have a book blogger, they will share your books. And for me, that's been the most supportive place for me and my books. I can really focus my time and attention on Instagram. Again, I hired a publicist, so I would reach a lot of readers. And then the thing Roger and I were talking about is I just went to Thriller Fest, and I was part of this debut authors program, and there's an author named Steve Barry who takes all these debut authors and kind of swears us to secrecy about, he talks about the industry and what you need to know in the industry. And you are, as an author, you are your own best advocate. It's not your editor that's responsible for your success or your agent or your publisher or your publicist. It is you. And the secret to this is knowing this industry. If you want an agent, you need to know what an agent does. You need to know how to read a contract. You need to know what it means to get a publishing deal in the traditional publishing world. You need to know your numbers. If you do get a book deal, how many books are they going to print? Where are those books going to? If you sell a good number of books, where did they sell best at? You know, you have to ask. You have to be willing to ask these questions. I feel a lot of times authors can feel like they're completely in the dark. I talk to a lot of authors like, okay, great. You just launched, you know, 2 months ago. What are your numbers? How many books have you sold? I'm like, I don't know. No one's told me. So you need to be willing to ask these questions and really know everything you can about this business. I feel like it's a rapidly changing business. And unfortunately, a lot of us say, oh, I just want to write. And that's just not ever going to be the case anymore. You have to know about marketing. You have to know about social media. I will say, though, if you don't enjoy those things, there are people that you can outsource this stuff to. It will cost money. But I always think you do yourself a disservice when you just hand it over and you don't learn along the way. We do wear many hats as writers today. If you want the traditional book deal, there's a lot that goes into it. There's a lot of work to be done. But, you know, look at it as a business. Take the emotion out of it and just, you know, dive in. I think just like knowing about the industry, for me, knowledge is power. And that's what I would say.
Can I chip in?
Yes.
It'll dovetail nicely. So kind of the topic that I have been, I think the thing that I think about when it comes to career management for writers, and something I've talked to a lot of authors about, it really goes with what Priya is saying, but kind of from the publicist side, from the industry side, is, yeah, time management is one of the best things that you can do for yourself. And that comes into play in like a lot of different areas, but like what she's saying about, you know, you do need to probably hire out someone for certain areas. You still need to know what they are doing.
Yes.
And be informed, because you are their partner. So when you think about whether it's your in-house support, if it's a traditional book deal, or if you're indie, or also you've hired private companies to help you with certain aspects, whether that's publicity or marketing, et cetera, or if you're a self-published author, then, you know, maybe this is even issues of design or whatever. You want to hire a trusted expert that you think is going to do a great job, but you aren't just being like, and I've hired you, now go into the world and talk to me in 6 months. Like, that, you know, wouldn't be wise. So you still remain their partner in how you work with them, and making sure that you both have like a good functional relationship, and that you're checking in. And depending on, you know, how that partnership plays out, that relationship may look differently, because everyone has different work styles that they prefer, right? But in general, a component for me of author time management, which is really, really vital to getting your work done, is who are you choosing to be on your team? So once that team is kind of pulled together, based on kind of what areas you see as not as strong for you, and not in a negative way, but there are, for instance, like certain people that they're already maybe very good at self-promotion. So there may be elements of publicity or marketing that they're really, really equipped to do for themselves, right? And then you kind of have to pick and choose based on the time you have allotted. So something that I think some authors have found helpful that I've talked about at conferences before is thinking about so when you're kind of earlier stages with your manuscript, it's all about the writing process. So some people have, everyone approaches that differently, but some people say you do an hour a day or 5 hours a day or whatever your writing time is that you are able to carve out. Maybe it's 30 minutes every week. Hey, I'm like coming home. I came home from my office one day, and like the bug, you know, and I just sat with a journal, not even a laptop, guys. It was great. It was so freeing. And I sat with a journal and just like, frantically for 45 minutes on like Wednesday night or something. And it felt really good. But that was my writing time this week. And that was it. That's it. That's all I had time for. But whatever the time that you are consistently making for your book and for your career, later on, that time's going to start to get cut up. So don't be thinking, I finished the book, now I have so much more time. You will have less time, actually, because you'll have actually more to do. So it's really easy before you do a first book, before your first deal, to think, once the writing process is over, like, I've done it all. But don't be fooled, because then you have to do all the other business end of things, and you might not have more time to do it in. So that's, of course, when you start to think about the time management issue of, well, if I only have 1 hour a day to work on my author career, how will I spend that 1 hour? And that maybe sounds extreme, but I'm sure all these published authors can speak to it. It's pretty real.
Well, one of the things that I would just suggest is before you're published, if you are not published yet, start now. Start finding your readers. Get online. See where they are showing up on social media, what they're reading, what other authors are kind of competitive titles to you. Start following their followers. Start commenting on their books. Start, you know, taking pictures with their books. I feel like this industry is so based on reciprocity. I really try to support other authors as well. So I'm not just, when my book comes out, like asking like, hey, will you take a picture of this or promote my book? I mean, authors are so generous and we will often help each other, but if you can start now and start finding your readers ahead of time and really getting engaged with them in a very authentic way, not just because you want something, I think that that is so great because, like Sarah said, it's so overwhelming. Like, you get a book published and you're like, okay, great. Now what? Now the work begins. Now it's a business. Now, you know, numbers are involved and people's expectations and it's a lot. Like, the writing, I think, is the easiest part of this whole thing.
Yeah, you kind of want to, like, to put it in academic terms for the three of us on this panel that have that background now. You know, you want to segment your market out before your book even comes out. So you're figuring out who are my readers, who are my buyers, what consumers are interested in my product. And you're doing that on the front end. Like, you know, do your homework in advance.
Okay. So, and I know for myself, when I hear all the talk about social media, I'm very much an introvert. I can extrovert myself long enough to speak to a group and that sort of thing. But otherwise, social media, all that is really creepy to me. And I do it because it is part of my role. But I think you have to think about who you are, as you were saying, to do it very authentically. Think about who you are and what fits for me. And for me, I like blogging, but I'll be honest, I have cut off the comment section of my blog. I don't allow it anymore because there were too many yahoos that got on there and really said nasty things for no reason. And, you know, you get lovely compliments too, but I just at some point said, I know that's probably a no-no in the social media world, but comments were not helpful. They were not adding to the experience.
Boundaries are never a no-no.
Yeah.
So that sounds like a healthy choice.
And don't do something you don't want to do. If you hate Facebook, if you hate Twitter, if you hate Instagram, don't get on it. Cultivate your email list. A newsletter, I feel like, is still one of the best tools to reach people directly. But yeah, pick something you actually like and want to spend time doing.
The thing you hate the least. You do have to pick. Let's be real.
I still hate it.
I'm putting on my PR hat, guys. You do have to pick something, some way to find connection. So if you hate all of the ways, what do you hate the least?
Yeah.
Okay. Lean in there.
But
do pick
nice
something.
About it, yes.
Okay, so So we're doing well time-wise. Luann, I'd like you to pick up now from, you come from a very unique angle being a CPA, and you really do drill down on the writing angle on the, I'm sorry, the financial angle. So tell us about that.
What I'm hearing is exactly what people who come to me and they're traditional business, they're not writing, they want to sell something or they want to make something. And this is exactly what they have to do. It's exactly what writers have to do. It is a business. You have to think about your market. You have to think about who's going to read your book. Where are they going to be found? Exactly the same thing if you're going to sell widgets. Where are those people? How are you going to tell them about your widget? How are you going to tell them that your widget is better than the other guy's widget? And it's exactly that kind of business. And if you think that it's going to be easy, or you're gonna live on some lotus pond where you write a few words and people talk about how great you are and how erudite and your wonderful use of language. Well, forget that. I run a business. You think about it all the time. It's like your baby. And you think about your writing. I know I do all the time. I see something and I think, oh, what is going on there? And the same thing, I'll hear something and I'll think, I've got to look that up in the code. That might save some clients some money. So it's constantly information coming in. How can I use it? And what good will it do me? And, you have to, what's your bottom line? You cannot deduct any expenses until you have income to deduct it from. Yes. So
yeah, don't quit your day job.
Yeah, exactly.
Do keep track of them
absolutely.
As they occur,
that's,
because
that's
someday you will have income.
Keep track of it, because you can. If you're starting a new business, a regular type of business, as opposed to a writing business, you can capitalize those. I don't want to get too technical and deduct them later when you have income.
So what? I can ask a specific deduction question.
Okay. Yeah, so keep track of them.
Because sometimes I go on trips and I use that information in a book.
Uh-huh,
I'm doing research on a book.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm doing that right now. And I'm hoping to get that book out this year, and I took that trip in March. So if I don't quite get it out this year and I get it out next year, can I still deduct it on this year's tax?
No. Unless you change your operating entity to something that does not have a calendar year, You are stuck with January through December now. You can be incorporated as a C corporation. And you also have to watch that. You can't go on a trip, a 10-day trip, and spend half an hour doing research and deduct it. You have to document that. Today, I went to this cathedral and I looked at the architecture because that's going to be a major plot point. That's going to be, and the next day I went here and I researched this and I was there for 4 hours. Yeah, you have to keep, because the IRS is going to say, prove to me that this is a deductible expense. And the way you do that is through your notes, where you went, showing the book that was published. Because they may question it.
I better get on the law.
Yeah. But so the deduction, I'm very interested in this as well, and I have never heard anyone talk about this, so this is great.
All right.
Well, tell
other people, because I pitched this panel, and I go, no writer's going to come. This is too dull. And I go, no, they need to hear this.
They do need to hear this. I want to hear this because I'm planning a research trip this coming summer, but I'm not planning to put a book out in 2020. So
mm-hmm.
does that mean I cannot deduct my expenses?
Not this year, unless you have writing money. If you have... As a CPA, it's all my practice, and
yeah.
I have lots of money coming in, and I just
yeah.
deduct it, because if it supports the practice. You keep track of it now,
mm-hmm.
and when your book comes out, you have this record, when you make your $20,000 or $30,000 on your book, you say, well, I have this $5,000 expense. You can't.
Even though it was from.
Yes, but you have to keep your receipts and keep your, because what you're doing is you're capitalizing it.
Mm-hmm.
And you're going to deduct it later once you start your, it's called startup expenses.
Okay.
And you're going to deduct it later. You can't deduct it all at one time. There's stipulated, 60 months, so you'll have to divide it up. But still, that's a deduction that's going to take, you're not going to pay tax on that.
Well, there we go. I was just going to eat it.
All right.
All right.
Eat it.
So before we
deduct it next year, if I don't get the book
out. You may not be able to deduct it all, but you'll be able to deduct it ratably. You'll have to talk to your CPA, or you'll have to contact me.
Okay, I'd like to take a look at that. Yeah, she has cards. So I'd like to table the questions for just a minute. We only have one more presenter, and then I have a feeling there are going to be a lot of questions in the room, so we will open it up and have time for all your questions. But you really need to hear from Roger. I have had the pleasure of sitting here the last couple days and hearing Roger speak on several panels, and have just been so impressed with his wealth of knowledge about a lot of things connected to this topic. So have at it.
I'm going to get down in the weeds of the career a little bit, and I'm going to start with something that Rhea said. I, too, went through that debut author program at Thriller Fest, and I, too, was sworn to secrecy by Steve Barry. But I am going to break the silence.
Wow! See, this was worth waiting for.
But just on one point, because this was the first thing that he said to us, and it's the first thing that he says to every new class of debut authors. You think when you get a book contract that your job is to be a writer. Your job is to stay in the game. And staying in the game is an increasingly complex endeavor. And you have to figure it out for you, because there's no one-size-fits-all for everybody. There are things that we all do. Some of them will work. Some of them will not work. Some will work better than others. And I have been, over the past 2 years, 2.5 years, been in virtual constant book tour. By January of 20, I will have done 100 live events, covered the country a couple of times, and I've made every mistake there is to make. But I've kept good notes. So, I've kept every receipt. I've got a spreadsheet as big as that wall with everything on it. But the thing is, there are going to be these oceans of opportunities, and it can become bewildering. So I'd like to draw a line in the sand in two different places, just so we can think about something in a certain confined way. A year before your book comes out and a year after your book comes out, that two-year window is an extremely magical and incredibly dangerous period, because a lot can go right and a lot can go wrong, and there's all sorts of people out there pulling you one way or another. What I would like to focus on, and this isn't the universe of things, it's just something I think that might be practical, is think about all the sorts of events that you might want to engage your time in to promote your book. Bookstore events where you go and give a talk, or book what I call just a sit-and-sign, where you go and spend a few hours in the store. It's not even a promoted event. You're just there with your books at a table, stalking the customers as they come in, trying to hand-sell your books. Or you could make a library appearance, or you could give a speech at a writer's club, or write a byline article, or go on a blog tour. You can go to a writer's conference and be on a panel. Every one of these things is a different thing. Every one of them will have a different effect on your life. Every one of them will be better or worse suited for you on a personality level. You should try all of these things, and you should be very careful to note the response you get and how it makes you feel, so that you're not doing the things that you don't like to do. When Rhea said, if you don't like this certain kind of social media, stay away from it. When you don't like any kind of a book promotion event, stay away from it, because it's going to mess you up to do things that you're not emotionally equipped to do. You will turn people off, and you will turn yourself off as you get bad reactions to things. So as you go out and you do these things, and I do encourage you to try them all at least once, be very careful to be self-aware about what's happening inside you and the sorts of responses that you're getting from the people that you're dealing with. Because when you're out and about, you're meeting your reading public. And you're also meeting people who will influence your reputation. And that's the other dichotomy I want to put on you, not just the marks for time in the sand, but your writing career is going to be composed of two big pieces, your readership and your reputation, the promotion side of your writing career. They're not the same thing, but they can feed each other very well. My first 60 events, I chased down most of them myself. But I met so many wonderful people at a lot of those that they start inviting me to do things. So as my reputation grew in the writing community, not necessarily amongst readership, but in the writing community, I got invited to do more and more things, which makes life easier. And you get invited to do things where the audience is prepared to meet you and life becomes good. So this readership, and you get invited to do things where you can grow your readership. Come do this bookstore event with me. Come talk to my book club. Come talk to my writing club. All of those are simultaneously readership and reputation enhancers. And it's just this virtuous circle. The more you do of the things that you're good at, where you meet your public and you meet your readership, the more often you're going to sell books and the more often you're going to get invited to do other things. So you have to think about these very carefully. What's good for me and what's not good for me? And stick with the things that work for you. And be jealous of your time, because that first year is going to start something. You're now in the manufacturing business, right? And a company that just manufactures goods and leaves them in the warehouse quickly goes out of business. You have to be on top of all of it. And getting out in public is a huge piece of it. You cannot be a successful writer today, or it would be a rare thing that you could be a successful writer today entirely from your house. I just don't think that that model works very often anymore. You're going to have to get out and meet your public. So be very careful, selective with your time, self-aware about who you're dealing with and what you're doing, and go back for repeat events if you can. Behave when you're out in public, because that will get people to invite you to do things or ignore you in the future. Sometimes I'll go to a bookstore and I say, when do you want to come back? I say, well, I don't know when my next book is coming out. Oh, we don't care. When would you like to come back? You can come back anytime you want to. That's the golden moment, you know. But you have to be doing something that you're good at before you're going to have that experience. But you're going to have to try a lot of things and be willing to risk failure a few times to do it. It's exciting. But that 2-year span is your chance to get out there and find yourself, build your reputation, and discover your readership. So think about it as a very time-constrained opportunity. You're going to have a lot to do, but you do have to get out of the house and you do have to meet these people.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
About that? So I just launched this book, and I, kind of the same thing. I said yes to everything on my first book. Like, yes, 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 I'll do it. And by the end, I almost had a breakdown because I, again, have a 7-year-old daughter. And I was like, I can't do this. Like, I'm so exhausted. I don't have anything else to give. But so this book, I was like, I'm going to be more strategic. And here I am again. I've said yes, 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 yes to a million things. But for you going forward, because you tried pretty much everything, what will be your strategy for book 2 in terms of getting out there with events? I've talked to so many authors in this space in particular who are like, don't spend your time on events after you've done that the first time. If you're going to spend money, spend it on, you know, direct marketing, targeted ads, things like that, and then just write. And I'm like, well, but I'm with you. I think getting in front of people is very important, but what will be your strategy for book 2?
Well, I did hire an outside publicist for my second book, mm-hmm. and it worked very well. And that's an entire other panel to talk about engagement.
Yeah, oh, God. Yes, yes.
But keep this in mind. A lot of first-time writers are a little bit skittish about hiring an outside publicist because they're going to think, well, my publisher's going to think that I don't think that their marketing effort is that good. No, nothing could be further from the truth. You're hiring a helper, a free helper for your publisher. And if you hire a publicist that knows how to deal with a publisher, they'll be thrilled to work with them. You know, just put them in touch with each other. They know what to do. They're pros. So I will do that again. Mm-hmm. I study my list of things that I've done. So I will get in contact with the stores and the libraries where I've had the most success, you know, as many months, whatever their lead time is, and I always ask them, what's your lead time for events? So for the events like this and the bookstores and the libraries, I'll start getting in touch with them early, and I'm just not going to do a lot of other things. All these other things that I've tried and they were just, you know, marginally successful. Come talk to our wine club, you know, and you do it the first time because you think you have to. Well, I'm just, you know, that's a whole day gone by the time I drive across the Atlanta metro area. I won't be able to do those things as much anymore. So I'm just going to do the things that are successful, that I've proved to myself or successful, and maybe experiment with one or two risky things outside the physical geographic area where I've concentrated my efforts before. So,
yeah. I would like to open it to the audience, if you don't mind. I know we have a lot of hands. There was a hand in the back there when I was kind of stifling everybody.
Basically, should you know, we? This is my writing process too. So, all I keep hearing is, "This is a business. You're a business. Your product is your sellable piece, and that sort of thing." And I agree. I believe in that. So, along those lines, do I need a license? Should I get a license? Should I do an LLC and start going through that process in order to kind of cover my back?
I don't think so. People come to me, I just started a business. I went to a lawyer. He set up this corporation. You don't need to do any of that till you're worth more than you owe. Nobody's going to sue an empty pocket. they want to sue with where the money is. And you can start all that. But when you go to the bank or what have you, they're going to make you sign over your house because they want to get their money back. They're just going to pierce that corporate shield and go directly to you. They're going to say, yeah, we'll put it in your corporate name, but we want your house. We want your car. We want your personal assets because your corporation doesn't have any. So what would be the point? So no, there's no point in doing all that until you absolutely have to.
But let me say that that lawsuit thing, which rings a big bell with me, because I used to do that. Always assume that wherever you are in public, that you're being filmed, or your voice is being recorded.
Mm-hmm.
There's a recorder on the
right
front of this table. It has been running since 30 minutes before the panel began.
So, and to that end, I want to readdress your question, which is a problem with asking actual questions of any professional. You know, because I said you couldn't deduct your travel this year, and then I remember, oh, yeah, but you're already published, and you're already making money. So you possibly could. That's why you need to develop a relationship with a financial advisor, a CPA, or somebody who knows the code, because I'm not sure I gave you the best advice there. You should go talk to your CPA about it. Because someone comes in and asks me a question, I don't just say yes or no. I say, well, what did you do yesterday? And what's your plan for the future? And how much money have you made so far? And what other, you know, there's a, you know, maybe a half hour or an hour interview before I can answer the question.
Mm-hmm. Back to the good time management. Yes, financial advisor / don't do your own taxes, okay?
Yeah,
you're a writer. You don't, unless you actually are a CPA, don't be a CPA.
Exactly.
Hire that out. You just gave yourself hours and hours and hours to work on your business instead.
Right. In general, if people say, should I do my own taxes? I say, if you have one W-2, do your own taxes. You have pretty much anything more than just one W, and that's if you have five W-2s, and still, there's a lot to it.
I feel like you were saying about lawsuits.
Well, my point was, there's this thing called defamation, and if you say the wrong thing about the wrong person, they might sue you. So always be careful of what's coming out of your mouth and what you're doing with your hands when you're out in public. Because if you get recorded doing something that puts someone off, you know, that they find defamatory, they could sue you. And they might lose the lawsuit, but being a defendant in a defamation lawsuit or any sort of personal injury lawsuit, and defamation is a type of personal injury, being a defendant is ruinously expensive and one of the most demoralizing experiences you will ever have. Even if you, as the defendant, win, it will wear you out.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Also,
that's why I corrected what I said. I didn't want somebody hearing that and say, oh, I can deduct that. But no.
Also, on the kind of interpersonal side of things, and this isn't meant to be, like, scary, but I think it's easy when you're moving into a specific writing community to feel kind of anonymous. And I want to very nicely say, if you keep writing and you publish books, you are not anonymous. People begin to know you, especially if you are in mystery world. I love working with mystery writers. I read mysteries. I've always said that. And, like, I think that the mystery thriller world is the nicest group of weirdos I've ever been lucky enough to be a part of. We are people that think about murder and kidnapping and really terrible stuff, but also are lovely, gentle, mindful human beings. It's kind of weird, guys. When I talk to people about, like, you know, people I've worked with, like, oh, it's the nicest person, but he writes about this. And they're like, what? But all that to say, like, this is a fairly small community. If you think about, like, a lot of other professions, say they have, you know, 50 conferences a year because there's so many millions of people that are involved in that profession. But when it comes to mystery writers, there's about 3 big conferences. We're at one of them, okay? So you are going to see the same faces. And that's actually, like, a really good thing. But to say, you know, to go off what Roger's saying is, yeah, reputation is important. And I think for most people, it's easy, right? Most people, I believe most people are generally good. So I think for most people, this is not an issue. But just keep it in mind, like, because it's easy to come to me like, I don't know anybody, so no one knows me. But actually, people will begin to know you and they want to know you. And it's a really positive thing. So it's an opportunity to put your best foot forward in a really nice way and get to know the community. And some of you clearly are doing that and have been doing that for years. So I'm not trying to preach to the choir, of course. But yeah.
Okay, we have someone here who's had a question for a while. I do want to say one thing, and that is if you have an insurance agent, ask them about umbrella policies. Just keep it an umbrella policy. It's an overall policy that protects you from a lot of things. If somebody, you know, trips and falls on their way to your, you know, your latest book event. So,
Roger.
Yes.
I want to know if you pitch when you're calling libraries, different venues for a writer speaker presentation. Mm-hmm. Do you pitch the event topic?
Well, you mean like for a conference, like for this?
No, like in a library, well, creating an event, or are you joining an event that's already in place?
Well, if I get invited to join an event that's already in place, I'm really happy to do that. But for me, the kinds of events that I invest my time in setting up for myself are the most basic, and they are what I call a sit and sign.
Okay.
I find that I connect better with readers when I am doing that, and that just means me sitting at a table with stacks of books, hand-selling to the customers as they come in. And I pitch it this way, and this is a very important thing, because even if you're an established writer, when you call a bookstore to set up an event, the default disposition of the person on the other end of the line is no, because it's a lot of work for them and often little payoff. So I have my spiel. It's printed out. I'm reading it as I'm on the phone with them, and I literally get it out in one go so I can't be interrupted. And the point of doing it that way is I want them to understand I am volunteering to be a free employee for the afternoon to sell a particular batch of inventory. And if they don't even want to make the financial investment to buy the books and have them in their own inventory, I'll bring my own. Or if they want to buy some books and they're hesitant, you know, well, there are other events where I have to bring my own, so if you have 2 or 3 left and you don't want to keep them, I'll buy them from you when I'm leaving the store. I will do the sorts of things like that that will get me in the door and then go in and try to act normal when I'm there so that when I call them back for the next book or if I just want to come back and sell some more books 6 months later, they say, oh, Roger, we love you. That was just so wonderful. When would you like to come back? So that's how I do it.
Because you sold a lot of books or because you're very nice personally?
Well, I don't know. I'll leave that to others to judge. But I am always very mindful that these people have put time and effort into it, even if I'm carrying most of the load myself. So I'm really nice. I send thank you letters. I might bring donuts when I show up. And there will be times, and I've been to them with major New York Times bestselling authors, when you throw a party and nobody shows up.
Yeah, and I would say, like, bookstores aren't always the best places to sell books. Like, think outside the box a little bit. Like, looking in your area for luncheons, like, sometimes there are these, like, huge luncheons that are put on or ticketed events. There's some bookstores. There's a bookstore out of Pawleys Island, South Carolina called Litchfield Books. The bookstore owner is amazing, and this is an exception to the rule, but she will do these ticketed events a few times a week. She will get around 150 people to show up. They are guaranteed to buy your book. You show up as the author, you speak, you have a lovely lunch, and that's that. And then that's really worth your time and effort. Also, like, looking at where your books are sold, like, this book just came out in Walmart, Target, and Costco. So I did a Costco book signing, which was the weirdest experience of my whole life. But, like, people were going by with, like, super-sized rolls of toilet paper, and I'm like, hey, you want a book to go with that toilet paper? And I sold a book every time I said that. But I sold a lot of books just because I think it was not necessarily a place, even though Costco is such a huge seller of books, but thinking, I don't know, maybe outside the box sometimes,
well,
because
that's
bookstores can be.
Outside the box. I mean, that's pretty brilliant.
So, airport bookstores.
Oh, yeah.
Just go ask them. You never know.
Huge, yeah.
From the industry side on this topic, you know, I'm friends with lots of booksellers and bookstore managers, and they can be hard places for authors, and this isn't putting them down, but the reason why is they get jaded because so many authors are like, great, I'm going to be here, and like there's just going to be a bunch of people in the audience that are all going to buy my book because you're a bookstore, right? And that kind of happens a lot, especially with a new author. And the bookstores are like, oh, gosh, not this one again. Like, because they are a venue. They're just a place where people can go. They don't bring the people. And so when you are a savvy author that comes in and knows, like, my job is to do the work here and bring the people, they are like, oh, someone that gets it, someone that understands what I understand my job to be, and they understand what their job to be too. So then you become a partner of the bookstore instead of a hindrance or an annoyance to the bookstore, and that's how bookstore events can work well, is by you saying, I want to come offer you something. I want to be your free employee today, etc. So, you know, from the industry side, that's what they're looking for. And also to kind of harken back to the sort of like, oh, are events worth it or not? Yes, in my opinion, events are where books are sold, and events are where you make connections with tastemakers.
And so, always bring your friends. I've had many writer friends say, come, even at conventions where they're having a book signing, and they'll give me an armload of books. I say, come and get in line. One of them was signing next to Stephen King. He says, no one's going to be in my line. I want, he had all his friends. And when I got there with my armload of books, he had a whole line. He goes, yeah, just put them down and go. You don't have to stay. So bring your friend, call them and say, I've done this for other authors. And sometimes the friends were the only ones that showed up at the book signing. Mm-hmm. But we were a crowd. They didn't know that it was just our friends. They thought, oh, look at all these people who've never been to this bookstore before are here.
Oh, I took a picture of the crowd when I was having my book signing earlier. They were all there to see David Morrell, but no one is going to
I love it. You know, call and say, please come and act like, you want to support me even if you don't.
Exactly. And the bookstores, in other event spaces, but especially like booksellers, first of all, like this is really kind of 101, but if you aren't going to a bookstore near you already, start going sometimes, get to know them, okay? Then when your book comes out, you already know them, right? You've done the work on the front end. But also, people that work in bookstores are career book people. So even though it's just like the girl that's like stocking the book in the back or whatever, I almost guarantee you later she's going to either be a bookstore manager or maybe she's going to become a publicist or she'll be a writer herself that now is a friend of yours. Book world is a small world and we all know each other, okay? So the people that you know that are working here, then they actually open up their own bookstore or whatever, like, or they open up a third bookstore with a friend and so there's a lot of that.
The next question is, if you don't mind, can you give a parameter of what a new publicist would cost?
I hired, and we only have 2 minutes, so we're going to need to quickly.
I would say that question is like saying, how much does a CPA charge?
It depends on what they do.
Find one. I mean, you're going to have to ask a lot of questions.
Give a range.
Okay, so I can speak from my own range. So my first book, I did a 10-month campaign. I went all in, it was $20,000. Then for this book, I have hired a local publicity firm as well. I hired the same publicist for a lower amount, $7,000. I hired a local publicist for $1,300 a month for 6 months. And then I've also tried some direct marketing for around like $5,000 or $6,000. So I'm trying a bunch of different things to see what works so I can spend less and less per book. I went all in because, again, no one knew who I was. And I think it was definitely worth the investment.
Okay, we have our two-minute warning. And so what I thought I would do, I know we could go on for another hour, and I am amazed at the talent on this panel. How about as succinctly as each person can? One final quick piece of advice.
Oh,
if you could just say one thing, real quick.
Oh, no, why did you make me?
I know. All right, would you like to start?
I'll be second.
All right, you go ahead, Roger.
The author, agent, editor triangle. Be very mindful of that, how that relationship works. You can burn your agent and your career will live if you burn your editor. you have to find a new job. Okay, mm-hmm. So be very careful about if you have something that needs to be done that's tough between you and the editor, sometimes it might be better to have your agent do that for you.
That's brilliant. I say read anything by Stephen Pressfield, particularly the book Turning Pro. It's that decision that I am now a pro, and that he differentiates you from the amateur. And what the amateur does, who has a million ideas, the pro actually gets to work. So Stephen Pressfield, Do the Work is one title, but Turning Pro is another.
I say keep all your receipts, and don't just keep your receipts. Write down why you're keeping, if you won't remember 6 months. You know, did you have a luncheon or whatever? And the other thing is, it's just general information. The IRS never calls. That's my PSA. They never call. They never, ever call, and they never ask for money on a gift card or any type of card like that.
Okay. I just say this is a career. It is a long game. Build it brick by brick, book by book. Don't try to know everything right off the bat, but and ask for help. I mean, that's why we're here. Like, just ask. If you don't know the answer to something, someone does. And just get to know the people in this community because they're very, very generous.
Sarah, you ready?
Sure. Going off of that, just say thank you to everybody all the time.
Amen to that.
Thank you.